Well, good morning. Appropriate song to transition, Overwhelmed. It's talking about us being overwhelmed by God's majesty, by His just sheer awesomeness. I'm going to talk to you today, at least the first couple minutes, about being overwhelmed in a different way. My week wasn't the best, and I'm not usually one to complain, but I'm going to share a little bit about how my week went. Has anybody else been with me? A little rough, a little tough time this week, feeling a little overwhelmed? Okay. Hopefully that'll change, because today's a new day. Let's see. Our week started out Monday. Monday was looking good. Tuesday, Angie had an appointment after school to get her foot checked out and by the surgeon that took care of her. She's been phenomenal so far. Really going above and beyond. And we just think she's amazing. So if anybody needs anything done on their feet, go talk to Angie. She'll hook you up with a wonderful orthopedic podiatry lady that knows what she's doing. But when she cut the cast off, she didn't cut the cast off. Her people came in and cut the cast off. But she came in and looked at it. She's like, that's not usually a sound you want to hear from your doctor when they're looking at you. Doesn't usually mean it's a good stuff. It's a little puffy, a little pink, not red, not like super infected where pus is flying out everywhere. But, oh, you think that's bad. It's going to get worse during the message. Okay. Okay. But enough that concerned her, and she said, you know, I think we ought to give you some antibiotics, and we'll just treat what might be there. And she took the stitches out and still wasn't real happy with how things looked. So being the precautious doctor that she is, the perfectionist, she said, all right, we're going to put the cast back on, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. And she's like, well, can't I drive? Because she was looking forward to getting in the boot. So she could drive, even though she can't drive with the boot on, she'll have to take the boot off to drive because it's on her right foot, and the right foot complicates things when you're trying to drive. She said, no, we're going to put the cast back on. We just want to be safe. And she's like, I'm tired of Dave driving me around. No, she didn't say that. But I didn't say that I'm tired of driving her around either, so... But we know that Angie likes her freedom and wanted to be able to do what she needs to do as far as driving and getting places without my assistance. Also, our schedule, our girls go in different places at the same time for soccer on Saturdays, and it makes it very, very difficult for me to be in Logington at 1 minute and then 25 minutes later be in Mollisock to coach and ref games there. So we worked it out. But had some assistance there. It just wasn't good news. That same day, Tuesday, I took Angie's car in to get an oil change. I was like, oh, she's a little overdue for an oil change. Well, get that taken care of for her while I have her car. And figure, all right, that and a tire rotation. And figure, I'm out the door, probably about $50, maybe $60. When he pulls it in, he says, hey, do you want your inspection taken care of too? Because it ran out last month. I was like, oh, I guess. And he says, well, you're probably going to need at least two tires. And I knew the tires were iffy. Yeah. So how much are they? I made a phone call to a competitor after he gave me the size and realized his price was actually pretty good. I said, all right, go ahead and do the inspection. Get the tires ordered. 5 minutes later, the mechanic comes in. He's like, hey, you're going to need brakes. And I was like, ugh. Front and rear.
What's that going to be?
Well, all totaled, I was out the door with just over $600. So, another beautiful day. That evening, Tuesday evening, I take my car. Instead of driving Angie's van around all day, I take my car to go work out. And as I'm getting on the highway, I'm pushing the gas down, but it's not really going any faster. Kind of a revving noise I'm hearing, but it's not going any faster. I'm thinking, oh, Lord, please. I don't need a new transmission at this point. I didn't get it checked out. I've been driving Angie's car for the rest of the week just to kind of put off the inevitable. Then Friday comes around. Friday comes around. I take her to work. And as I get up to take her into work, I'm like, man, I don't feel good. I do not feel good. And the more I said that, the worse I felt. So I took her to work and walked her in. And by the time I'm walking out, I'm like doing everything I can to get to the car without getting sick in the lawn. And I went home, went to bed till at least noon. And my message wasn't quite complete yet. I'm thinking, oh my, this is not good. How long is this going to last? Well, it lasted long enough. If you want to open up your bulletin here and take out the insert that you're supposed to take notes on. Must have affected me the day before, because when I talked to Peggy and sent her the information, I made a mistake on the bulletin, on the insert. Right at the very top, before you even start taking notes, it says 1 Samuel 15. I'm not off by one chapter, I'm off by two. It's actually 1 Samuel 17 is where we're going to be today. So, I figured that out Friday night as I'm trying to put some more of the message together. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So, if you just scratch out the 15 and put a 17 beside it, we'll try and get started here. The first point, number one, blank, blank will come. Now, I already knew this message and what it was going to be about. God just put it to the test. First two words are no trouble. Not N-O, but K-N-O-W. No trouble will come. And sure enough, he saw to it. He always makes sure that I'm preaching to myself when I'm up here, so. Anyway, no trouble will come. Jesus says in John 16:33, says, I have told you these things so that you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. See, when Jesus was saying this, he was actually encouraging his disciples all through that chapter. And encouraging us in the same time. Okay, he was preparing them for what was to come. Meaning his death and life after. He was telling them straight up, you're going to have trouble. But have courage. Don't get down. He said, I have already won the victory. In other words, Jesus has already won the victory. So we shouldn't be discouraged. We should be encouraged. Sometimes when you go into a rough situation, like my week, it's kind of nice if you know ahead of time how it's all going to work out. And he kind of tells us right here that take heart, I have overcome the world. I use this theory when I'm coaching. Coaching a couple different sports right now. One of them is the kettlebells that I do. And I have one of my guys, he's built very similar to me, same weight class and everything, and he's working his way up through the ranks. When he started with me a couple months ago, he's like, oh, really like to do this and get this rank, but I want to get a couple extra just in case they don't count some of them. Because if you don't do it perfectly, they don't count them. I said, don't worry, you're not only going to get 70, but you're going to get 80. He's like, I just want to try to get to 70, okay? I said, no, you're going to get 80, don't worry about it. So, in the process, we do some test sets every once in a while just to see his progress. And he was doing okay, and he was struggling a little bit, but he worked his way through it. Went to do a test set with him on last week on Wednesday when we do our training. He had had a neck injury, and he couldn't even make it all the way through. He's like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. We have competitions next weekend. How's this going to work out? I said, don't worry. You're going to be fine. You're going to do exactly what we said. So he messaged me and said, hey, I'm going in Saturday morning. Can you meet me there? I'm already thinking I got to be in two different places within a time period that's not going to work. But yes, I'll be there. I'll come into the gym, and I'll make sure that I'm there to do your test set for you. We did his test set. He struggled a little bit through it. He ended up with 80 reps. So I told him ahead, look, you're going to do this. It's not going to be a problem. He followed the plan and got exactly what we had determined ahead of time. Then he realized afterwards, he's like, hey, you told me I was going to get that. I was like, yeah, kind of works out that way. If you know the end before you start, makes it a lot easier. So everybody has their own troubles they face. Today, we're going to look back at a message I brought almost 2 years ago now. We're going to look at David. He's one of my favorite guys because he's got a really cool name. Anyway, we're going to be in 1 Samuel 17. Right now, I'm going to just read to you verse 4. But if you want to get to chapter 17 in 1 Samuel and stick something in there, we're going to be in and out of there most of the morning. So verse 4 says, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits in a span. Anybody remember the last time I preached on this, what I did? Got a ladder out, 6-foot ladder, and me, my puny little 5'7"-ness, climbed up all the way to the very top of the ladder, and I got up on my tippy toes, because with that, I was 9 feet, 9 inches tall, just like Goliath. And then I had another gentleman come up who was about David's age at the time, and he's not a small guy, because David really wasn't a little kid. You know, we teach in Bible school or Sunday school, sometimes they make it seem like David's just this little 10-year-old or something. He was about 18. He was a good-looking guy, really strapped, so, you know, he wasn't a little boy. But I kind of dwarfed the high school senior that was standing next to me when I was standing up on the ladder. To point something out, David was really, like, he just showed up on the scene. But Goliath had been for 40 days pestering these guys, bullying them, making fun of them. Yeah, he was a giant. He was 9 foot 9 inches tall. He was huge. He had like 100 pounds of armor on. So he was no little guy himself. But there was somebody who should have already taken care of this. Who led the battle in those days? The kings. They were the ones to lead into battle. Saul, if you remember Saul's story, he was a head higher than anybody else in his tribe, clan, I forget what they're called. But he was a big guy. So much so that when David tried on his armor, it didn't even come close to fitting. Saul should have taken care of this nuisance himself. He should have been the one to fight Goliath. He was a king. Now, sidebar, David had already been anointed king at this point. But he had to go back and work and tend to sheep. See, Samuel had come around as the prophet of the day. God told him, Saul's done, he's out. Anoint this guy I'm going to tell you to. He ended up anointing David. But did David go live in the palace right away? No, it's not how the story goes. He had to respect and honor Saul all the days of his life. David went back out to tend the sheep. But one thing, I believe David, at that point, knew there was a difference in him. Knew there was something different. He started acting as if he was king. He started acting as if he was king, ruling over the areas that he was in charge of. He was put in charge of sheep. Did he let anything happen to his sheep? No. Stuff started happening. Lion came, carried off one of the sheep. David called his dad on the rock telegram or whatever they had back then? No. He didn't send up smoke signals saying, please come help me. David chased after the lion, grabbed a hold of him, and beat him to death with his staff. Same thing when a bear came. Now, you guys, some of you guys hunt, I'm sure. Bears? Anybody hunt bear? Okay. You think you'd want to wrestle one of those things, let alone grab one and try and choke it out? No. I'm a pretty good wrestler, and I wouldn't want to do that. Not even with a little one. So, point number two is run at it with confidence in God. If you have trouble come your way, you got an option. We talked about it, I think it was last week, talked about Jonah. And what did he do when trouble came? Trouble came his way in the form of, he didn't like hearing what God had to say. Hey, go over here and talk to these guys. Tell them about me. He's like, nope, I'm going this way. And he ran from trouble. Well, David ran from trouble too, but he ran right to it. You have to run in with confidence in God. Because see, David realized he was not fighting by himself. Nor was he fighting for himself. 1 Samuel 17, I'm going to read 45 through 48. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I will strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give your I will give the carcass of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals. Same thing, same thing that Goliath just said to David not more than a minute ago. And the whole world will know that there's a God in Israel. All of those gathered here will know that it's not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. 48 says, as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. David knew God took care of him before with the lion and the bear. So let's look back. 17, I'm going to go back to 34 through 37. David said to Saul, your servant's been keeping your father's sheep with a lion or a bear. When they came and carried off the sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he's defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, go, let the Lord be with you. See, opposition doesn't prevent the presence of God. I'll say that again. Opposition does not prevent the presence of God. It provides an opportunity for you to use the presence of God to overcome it. Who are you trying to give credit to anyway? Not trying to take the credit yourself, I hope, when it's been clearly God that's delivered you. David sure didn't. He gave credit where it was due. Point number three. Take advantage of your advantage. I'll share this because I was already speaking of soccer yesterday. I had a referee a game before I coached a game. And there was a bunch of little kids running around. It's U8, so they're all under 8 years old. It's kind of funny. But anyway, the one kid tripped the other kid as he was trying to get the ball. He didn't trip all the way. Like, he stumbled, but was able to keep going and continue on with the ball. I should have called a tripping penalty, but because he continued on keeping control of the ball, that's called, Joe? That's called advantage. That's right. That's called advantage. So you don't make the call because it's actually to their advantage for you not to make the call. And he continued on. He didn't score, but he continued down the field quite a ways in an advantage position. So that's how it works in soccer. In hockey, it works similar. If my team causes a penalty, takes a slash at somebody else or hits them too hard, well, that's possible in hockey, but anyway, they hack at somebody in a way they shouldn't. As long as that team remains in control of the puck, they can continue to play and play and play. And the play will continue until the offending team, my team, since I'm the guy that hacked at him, as soon as we touch the puck, they blow the whistle. It could be 10 seconds. It could be 2 minutes. And they will continue to go and go and go until my team touches the puck again. As soon as we do, we're penalized. And I'll probably go sit in the box for a while. But works the same way. So if you're the other team, you take advantage of that. You pull your goaltender out of the goal, and you put another attacker on the ice. So that way you have six guys out there trying to score instead of five. You don't care if the goalie's not in there, because as soon as the other team touches the puck, they blow the whistle. So they can't score. It's impossible. So if you're smart, you take advantage of your advantage. Perception. Perception is the key to your reality. Of course, the famous question is, when you got half a glass of water up here, or half a bottle of water soon to be, is it half full or half empty? It's perception. Well, perception is the key to reality. Because the whole Israelite army, including the king, said, man, he's too big to kill. David saw the same guy from a different perspective. He said, man, he's too big to miss. You don't need a greater advantage. You don't need a greater advantage. You need a greater awareness of your advantage. See, David didn't have a greater advantage than the rest of the Israelite army. They all were fighting on God's side. Every single one of them was on God's side and had his favor. David just realized it. Because see, anytime Goliath would come out, every day when he walked out, for 40 days, the Israelite army cowered. And they started saying, man, and they actually heard him. David said, hey, what happens if you beat this guy? I mean, I know he says he's going to kill us, and when he does, our army is supposed to submit to his army, and so on and so forth. But what happened to the guy that beats him? And of course, they all started talking and telling David, look, you, first off, your family's free from taxes for the rest of your life. Your whole family. You get to marry the king's daughter, and you're going to be rich. He said he'd give you up to half the kingdom. David didn't really believe me. He asked a couple different people, but got the same answer every time. See, I believe David realized that an unrecognized advantage is the same as an unclaimed reward. The Israelites were basically satisfied to just survive, to just stay alive, because they certainly weren't living. David was not just satisfied. He knew God was on his side. He knew he definitely had the advantage, certainly not by size, not by anything we look at. David was not only satisfied to knock him out, because that's what happened. He hit him in the head with the sling. Wham, hit him with a stone right in the forehead. Now, we know from experience that even when a soccer ball hits you in the head, you can get a concussion. And I found out that just yesterday that I'm not allowed to teach how to head a ball anymore in soccer until they're 14 years old, because they're worried about concussions and the damaging effects that they can have. And the kids aren't allowed to head a ball in a game until they're at least 14 years old. I'm going to have some discussions with some people on that, because I think we need to at least train them how to do it properly, so that when they get put in that situation, they can handle it. Sorry for the sidebar there. David was not just satisfied to knock him out, because David had no idea. He didn't have a stethoscope with him. He had no idea if Saul was actually dead or if he was just knocked out. David knew he won, but he wasn't even satisfied with that, because he knew God wanted him to destroy him. First Samuel 17, verse 50. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. See, this is where we stop in Sunday school. Luke, you might want to turn the volume thing down in there. See, I'll give you a couple seconds to get it down. This is where we stop in Sunday school. Because we got cute little puppets in there and sometimes flannel boards, and this next part's a little hard to swallow in Sunday school. Verse 51. David ran over and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword. He took his own sword. Took hold of the Philistine's sword, drew it from the sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. Little rough to do with the puppets. Poor Ponder and Rudy wouldn't be faring so good in there. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout, pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Shakrim road and Gath to Ekron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp. David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. He put the Philistine's weapons in his own tent. See, for years, I read this. And I read it. And I knew exactly what it was. David took the stuff. you know, he took his weapons and carried the head, you know. And he brought him back and put him in his tent. Put the stuff in his tent. Because that's what it says. He put it in his tent. But I was wrong. I just recently realized they were in the middle of getting the spoils. So he was actually talking about Goliath's tent. Not David's tent. Matter of fact, David didn't even have a tent probably. Because why was he there? He was slepping cheese and bread to his brothers and the commanders of the army. I always thought it meant David went back home and took the stuff home with him. I don't believe so anymore. Because they were right there in the middle of getting the spoils. He took the stuff into Goliath's tent. Goliath's head was in his own tent again, looking around. See, what happened was just like that song. Now, I didn't grow up Christian as I know it today. Let's just say that, okay? I grew up in another church, obviously not this one, but another branch of Christianity, let's just say that. And I'd get sent to, my neighbors were Christians, and they had this Bible school, and we'd go to Bible school, my brother and I, because we really didn't have anything else to do. And they'd sing a song. Oh, you still got the pretty picture up there. we'd sing this song. I went into the enemy's camp. Oh, I'm not allowed to sing at home, so they can't stop me up here. I went into the enemy's camp, and I took back what he stole from me. Took back what he stole from me. Took back what he stole from me. I know you're going crazy. Went into the enemy's camp, took back what he stole from me. Because he's under my feet, under my feet, and he keep repeating. Okay. All right, I'm not going to make you suffer anymore. But that's exactly what he did. He went into the enemy's camp after stomping on Goliath and cutting his head off. Let me make this correlation for you. Did not our Jesus do the exact same thing? Did he not do the same thing? Went into the enemy's camp, kicked his butt, and came back to life. See, he came not just to deliver us from sin, but for us to live life with abundance. Don't just be satisfied with surviving, but finish the job. Be the conqueror that God called you to be. Cut off the head of your attacker with his sword. 1 Samuel 17, 55 through 58. As Saul watched David going to meet the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this young man?" Abner replied, "As surely as you live, your majesty, I don't know." The king said, "Find out whose son this young man is." And as soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, with David still holding the Philistine's head. Now, I got a couple things to say about these couple verses here. The first is, David was still holding his head. That's so cool. Sorry, I know you ladies probably don't like it, but I think it's pretty cool. I don't get to watch these kind of movies anymore because I got four girls in my house now, not just three. See, it was a huge achievement for him. It's not like putting a bearskin rug on your tent floor or having a big lion's head mounted inside your tent. This was a huge dude. He's still got the rock in his head. It reminds me of the little kids when they have like a trophy that they've earned. I mean earned, not just given one at the end of the season. These participation things about drive me crazy. Or a medal that they earned. It's all you can do to even look at it in their hands. They won't even let you hold it. Typically, they're like, yeah, you can see it, and not let you have it. Okay, here, you can see the... Well, here. Don't worry, I'm not going to fully undress like I did last time. But... kind of like this. This is one of the ones I got from Kettlebells. It says American Kettlebell Alliance on it. Says something on the back too. Well, we got a couple of them. Our family's been doing these Spartan races now. And when we're done the Spartan race, doesn't matter how filthy you are when you cross the finish line, they put one of these over your head. They put a Spartan finisher medal over your head. Now, there's a participation medal. But that's one you definitely earn, okay? I got pictures of it. We're covered in mud with this shiny metal sitting around our neck. Okay? Different competitions you go to, especially with kids. I'm no different. I'm just a big kid. Okay? I still got my medals, trophies at home. Later that day, after our Spartan race, we drive home. Like, we're all the way in Blue Mountain. Okay? It's like an hour and a half or so away. We're driving home. We stop at the little turnpike exit there and get something to eat. We still got our medals on. We showered. Well, showered is like hosed off and stuff. But we're still wearing our brand new medals. The same thing when we're done with the kettlebell competitions and stuff. I mean, everybody's proud to have it because you work so hard for it. Guess what? He's no different. He's got this big head. It's probably as big as his leg. You know, he's carrying it around. The second part about these four verses I just read. Saul and Abner didn't recognize David. They must be the most forgetful people in the Bible. Because he was just in there putting on his armor a couple minutes before that. And remember, David was called by Saul to play the lyre for him every time he got a disturbed spirit from the Lord. So David had been around King Saul for a long time, and he didn't recognize him. I speculate, and this is just Dave, I speculate it's because the presence of God was all over David. Just like when Moses came down from the mountain, and Jesus had an encounter with God the Father, their countenance was totally changed. It's not in there. Doesn't say that. But I think it makes a lot of sense. See, it didn't really matter, though, what Saul and Abner recognized or didn't. Because it's not what people recognize about you that gives you the advantage. It's what God puts in you. Remember when remember when Samuel, he was sent to anoint David, the next king? I'll skip back. You don't have to turn there. I'll read it to you. It's only two verses. 1 Samuel 16, verse 6 and 7. When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, surely the God's anointed stands here before me. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance for his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at things that people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. If you have asked Christ to come and live and rule in your life, you bowed your knee and said, God, I need you more than I need anything else. You have that same spirit living inside of you. that Pastor Don does when he's here, that his favorite pastor, Bill Johnson, has. Same spirit that Billy Graham has. You know, the guy gets up and says, you know, twinkle, twinkle, little star, and like hundreds of thousands of people come to Christ. The same spirit that the Apostle Paul had is living inside of you. The same spirit that is one with Christ in the Father. See, okay, maybe we're not called to preach like some of those guys. But maybe you are. Hopefully you're not just going to be satisfied with surviving anymore. After today, my challenge for you is to push yourself a little bit further. See things in a different way. Not only am I going to quit complaining about my situation, I'm going to thrive. Not only am I going to stay married, I'm going to enjoy my marriage. Not only am I going to raise my kids, I'm going to do it in a way that I lead them to follow God in the way that He wants. See, I don't want to be happy just not to sin anymore. I want to get to the place where I don't even desire it anymore. Point number four. Our last one. Today's attack might bring tomorrow's advantage. See, this is a different way of thinking. Instead of seeing how things are coming at you, how can you use that to your advantage? I'll tell one more story and I'll be done about me. In wrestling, when somebody would come charging at you, or judo, never did judo, okay? But when they come flying at you, you take their energy coming at you and you use it to your advantage and put them down. Okay? Sumo wrestling, the same thing. You see these big guys out there, okay? And they're pushing at each other, until one of them grabs the other guy's underwear and throws him out of bounds. They're taking what's coming at them and using it to their advantage because they're thinking differently. Let's fast forward 14 years. David's on the run now. He's on the run from Saul. 1 Samuel 21. I'm going to try and just speed through this one. 1 Samuel 21. David went to Nob, to Ahimelech, priest. Ahimelech trembled when he met him and asked, "Why are you alone? Why is no one with you?" David answered Ahimelech, the priest, "The king sent me on a mission and said, 'No one is to know anything about the mission I'm sending you on. As for my men, I told them to go meet me in a certain place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread, or whatever you can find.' But the priest answered David, 'I don't have any ordinary bread on hand. However, there is some consecrated bread here, provided the men have kept themselves from women.' David replied, 'Indeed, women have been kept from us, as usual. Whenever I set out, the men's bodies are holy on missions that are not holy. How much more so today?' So the priest gave him the consecrated bread. And since there was no bread there other than the bread of the presence that had been removed from before the Lord and replaced by hot bread the day it was taken away. Now one of Saul's servants went there that day, detained before the Lord. He was Doeg, the Edomite, Saul's chief shepherd. David said to Ahimelech, 'Don't you have a spear here or a sword?' 'I haven't brought my sword or any other weapon because the king's mission was urgent.' It was. The priest replied, "The sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah is here. It's wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you want it, take it. There is no sword here but that one." And David said, "There is none like it. Give it to me." See, a couple points I want to make here that I had to look up. The ephod, I mentioned it for a reason. I've had to figure out why. Ephod represents the will of God. And something else as I was studying for the message, like, why is the number 5 sticking out to me? Why did David grab 5 stones from the creek bed? I don't know. Couldn't really figure it out. He just used the first one. First one he pulled out. Boom, that's the one that killed him. He didn't have to hit him a second time. 5 loaves of bread. Why did he ask for 5 loaves of bread? Doesn't say. But the number 5 in Scripture, come to find out, 5 means grace. 5 means grace. So, David had both the will of God and his grace. We're in the lineage of David if we've been adopted as a son or daughter to Christ. We should take our rightful heritage that's yours. See, David went into the battle without a sword. But he used what came against him to finish his attacker. See, for David, the attack actually became the advantage. Just like David, your past victories are waiting for you in a place of your future assignment. David killed the bear and the lion. Then time goes by. He faces Goliath. The way he's even able to get on the battlefield with Goliath is he tells Saul the story about the lion and the bear. It was waiting for him in the future because of what he had already won. Now, obviously, if he would have lost those battles, he wouldn't have been able to use it in the future. With Goliath, he beat Goliath, cut his head off. Sidebar, not just Goliath. David killed 2 other giants in the future here. If you continue reading through Scripture, 2 other huge guys. But 14 years later, after he kills Goliath, that sword was waiting for him when he needed it the most. He was on the run. He had no way to defend himself. The sword was in the right place at the right time for David to take advantage of it. See, Romans 8:28 says, "We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who has been called according to His purpose." I find it interesting that David went to the church first when he was looking for food and he was looking for weapons. Maybe food. Okay, I think maybe food. I wouldn't even think of the church first for food, to be honest. I mean, they make good food. When we get together, we have great food. Sometimes you even get, like, food pantry stuff and things like that. Okay, that's not so great, but it will at least sustain you. But if I'm thinking of where I'm going to go in Jersey Shore for weapons, would you guys think to come here? Probably not. It was David's first thought. I'll go to the church. And I'll talk to the priest. See, God will break rules to bless you. God will break rules to bless you. He wasn't supposed to have the consecrated bread. But that's what grace is all about. Breaking rules to give you grace. We've all fallen short. We've all sinned. Worship team, I'm wrapping things up. If you guys want to come up, that's fine. We all sinned. We've all fallen short. We all need to go to the altar and ask for something that we really don't deserve. Then we all need to accept the grace that He has for us. We also need to accept the advantage Christ gives us in the Holy Spirit. Because see, Jesus told us, I gotta go. Because if I don't go, the Spirit can't come. Wait here for it, He said. Wait here for it. They told David, you can't do it. You won't do it. Who's telling you? You can't. Or you won't. See, the enemy's nothing but a punk bully. Don't just knock him down, because that's how you handle bullies. You take them down. Cut his head off. Finish the job. Lord, thank you for stirring this message inside of me today. God, I pray that your people take it and do exactly what you want them to with it. Because I believe each of them had an obstacle in mind as I was speaking today. That obstacle could be anything. Whatever's getting in the way between them and you. Lord, I pray you speak to them. Continue speaking to them. Lord, I pray you pester them so much they can't get away from it. Lord, I pray that they make things right with you and step in to the heritage that David left for us. That they would realize trouble is going to come. And when it does, they are to run to it, not away from it. Lord, I pray that they are able to take advantage of the advantage that He set up for us. By relying on you, having faith that you are there and you have their back. Lord, I pray that they're able to take the attack and turn it to the advantage, because you're the one guiding us. Recognize the presence that is all around them. Recognize the presence that's living inside of them. Thank you, Jesus.